commissioner from outside, only the king, and we have commissioner with the same commissioner from the office here in Cape Town. My name is Thabo Mpumlwane, the deputy chairperson, and I bring the apology of my chairperson from down under, gone on a speaking tour of gender equality in Australia, flying our flag, we're very proud of it. And this morning we send an SMS to wish us well and we see liberation going. I will ask the commissioner to introduce himself.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Commissioner Namaswanto Mazibuko.
Commissioner Wallace Nkotse, I'm the relevant commissioner here.
I'm in charge of Northwest. Thank you.
Morning. So he's harassing me. I thought he would do it and then stay in protocol. I mean, I don't understand. I'm here just for my MFO for the commission.
Good morning. Moshadi Kutu is here for the commission.
You have a few days. That's the commission.
Morning. My name is Mufisi Teleki, communications manager.
Thank you very much. I thought I should just give the context before the presentation, honorable members and chairperson, that we live at a time when the issue of the review of Chapter 9, the associated institution report, is back on the agenda. It is our hope that the matter will be closed soon, so that it gives us certainty in terms of the Commission for Gender Equality. Our position has been made very clear on the matter. Secondly, we meet at a time when the gender-based violence is emerging as an issue that needs a lot of attention, especially on the disability sector. The recent case of Ms. Mbaleza and Ms. Abiyarinana, whose mutilated body was found to meet albinism, is an embarrassment to all of us and a reminder of the work that we still have to do to assist our people to embrace our constitution and the need to respect the rights and the dignity of women in South Africa. We also meet at a time when there is an increase in femicide. Lots of cases that are before the nation on pressures in families and relationships that affect children and women. And in some cases, men, there is a case, just one case of a high profile case of a man killed by a spouse. Also, we meet at a time when we are seeing emerging of the battle of our games in terms of gender equality, the backlash in terms of, I guess, fundamental beliefs and practices and almost right-wing thinking or beginning to question the fundamental values of our constitution in terms of gender equality. We remain concerned about that. But we also are happy that the African Union has declared 2015 the year of economic empowerment for women, and therefore we have a solidarity not only with women of South Africa but women outside. So the question is, what are we doing as women of South Africa? And we live at a time when the Commission for Gender Equality is getting a lot of visibility and communities are embracing and understanding more the role. A lot of people accessing our call centers and coming to us for help, especially on the issues of estates and maintenance, and the young women confronted with that, and estates in terms of cultural practices. 2015 being the year of from MDG to SDGs, our country at the UN is also represented then. We are very happy that there is then one of the SDGs that deal with women empowerment and gender equality. The SADC protocol is coming to an end, and the question is, what are we going to, what if we review, where are we and where are we going with that? Next year, 2016, is 20 years of the Commission for Gender Equality, and we have traveled 20 years of our constitution, and we're very happy that we have traveled this journey. It is a year of reflection for us, and 60 years of the Women's March. And so we present this beginning to prepare for 2016 as the Commission for Gender Equality. At this point, I'm going to ask the CEO then to present to honourable members the work done by our dedicated commissioners and staff in the first quarter of the year. Thank you very much.
Today, we'll be talking directly to the work that we undertook for the first quarter, which is April to June 2015. And in this particular report that we are taking before the committee, we will be highlighting the work of the Commission, the targets that we've been able to reach, the issues that we are encountering with as we are working on the ground, and of course the CFO will then also take us through our spending trends and patterns for the work of this particular quarter. This quarter as well is normally characterized with quite a number of issues. It's a quarter where we are working very closely with the Auditor General to finalize our audit process, which will be then tabled later by the end of this particular month on the 30th. And it also is a time when we put, the plans that we have conceptualized prior to the start of the financial year, we then put them on track. And we normally also, during this particular time, now that we have plans, we also engage with quite a number of organizations on the ground to be able to plan in terms of what matters we will be able to collaborate on. I must indicate that in this new financial year, one of the strategic decisions that we have had to take, due to the fact that our funding was cut down at the beginning, was to ensure that we also push our education officers and the legal officers to work more closely together, especially when we are running specific campaigns from education office, and then we ensure that those particular campaigns, instead of running them separately, we ensure that they form part and parcel of the legal clinic. And having done that, as much as when we did that, we were really under pressure on the basis of funds, but we must indicate that in this particular quarter, we've actually seen fruits of having taken that particular strategic decision. Because when you look into the kind of files that we have been able to open and investigations that we are dealing with in this particular quarter, you really can see that it was a good decision to take, and it has resulted in improving in the commission being able to attract more cases. As well, having worked very closely and built relations with communities and some of the institutions on the ground have also helped. Key issues that we see surfacing across the provinces still relates to maintenance. I think in the last quarter we also highlighted this particular issue. We still have maintenance issues coming up, and we are still ensuring that all the information that we gather, we channel it to our parliamentary unit to ensure that as they monitor the progress of the maintenance bill that has been before this particular parliament, and as we engage on that bill, we are sure to ensure that all the issues that we are picking on the ground, we include them and highlight them as we engage in the submission for that particular bill. We're still coming up with a lot of widowhood issues for this particular quarter. Even though I think this time around, if you look in our previous quarter's report, we spoke to issues of estates and widowhood. However, at that point, the main prevalence that were, or issues that were really coming up and that were highlighted, were the fact that women were being chased out of the matrimonial home as soon as the partner is deceased. But this quarter as well, we're seeing more and more issues being raised in terms of accessibility and the processes that the Master of High Court undertakes. We are also working very closely with the Office of the Premier in KZN, because as we were working specifically on this particular matter, issues, you know, relating to tax laws and all that were coming forth as far as these estates, deceased estates are concerned, and more widows were highlighting some of the problems that they are encountering. And we have been able to engage with National Treasury. We started the engagement with National Treasury on that, and SARC as well, just to see whether there are, if there's anything that could be done to take some of the methods that we are picking up on the ground and see how they can deal with them as far as tax laws are concerned. Cases related to gender-based violence have also been in the increase for this quarter. And for this quarter specifically, when you look at our report, you'll see that Northwest Cape and Northwest have really been on the increase, specifically on femicide issues and domestic violence. And when you look at Northwest Cape, you really see, men banning women, it's that harsh. Banning your spouse and all that. So that is really one of the issues that is coming out. Provinces like Gauteng, when you look at the trend, they seem to really be battling on issues relating to sexual harassment. And of course, femicide as well. We have seen quite a number of cases that are in court within the Gauteng region around those particular issues. We also, the work that we also undertook in the previous quarters or in the last financial year around the international reports that we put forward, we've also seen them, you know, bringing quite a number of stakeholders wanting to come and work with us. In this particular case, we've had an engagement with the Office of the Human Rights Commissioner that's in Pretoria. Who has appointed somebody that is working now with treaty bodies across all the human rights area, and he has really come forward. He has also indicated that he can train and engage, and we also want to further engage with him to see if, you know, when the committee also has got its own workshops and all that, whether they can also be in a position to engage with him specifically on those bodies. I have highlighted the strategic objectives, just so it's still linked back to back to the ATP that we presented before this particular committee and during the month of March. And the first strategic objective is to ensure the creation and implementation of an enabling legislative framework that promotes the attainment of gender equality. Obviously, there are quite a number of sub-strategies that we put in place to support that sub-strategy. Specific activities that we are undertaking under this particular umbrella strategic objective is to ensure that we make submissions for legislative and policy enhancement. We drafted about three submissions for this particular quarter, and we engaged on the draft regulations under section 43.3 of prevention and combating of trafficking in persons. We have made submissions to COFTA on the draft customary practice of initiation, and we've made also submissions on the Presidential Remuneration Commission on the placement issue from the education sector. Under this particular strategic objective as well, we've got an activity where our research department is taking all the implementation, all the victims' charter reports that we've had. Remember, in the previous years, we carried quite a series of research reports where we were looking into the different departments on their specific obligations that they need to undertake under the victims' charter. And this year, what we are doing is to consolidate everything and then go back to all the departments just to get a sense of whether they've actually taken some of the recommendations and the findings that we put forward. So that's what we will be doing. For this particular reporting period, they've put forward their planning documents and they've drawn some implementation project plan in terms of how they will undertake that particular work. So, but for the second quarter, then they are starting to roll out to engage with all the six departments that are under the victims charter document. We also have the gender barometer report, and as we know, the gender barometer tool helps us to assess the status of gender policies and practices in private and public sector. It's basically for us to look how far we are doing in terms of gender mainstreaming. In this particular year, all these years we've been putting this tool to different departments and also to some of the municipalities. But this time around, we are wanting to focus on the private sector, and we are looking specifically into assessing gender mainstreaming within the mining sector. And we've done this particular quarter, we're just assessing to see which mining houses that we will be administered in the tool to, introducing ourselves to them and also introducing them to that particular tool. So we'll be having a report or a progress report as we go along in terms of what it is that we are finding from the mining sector directly. We are also carrying on with assessing how we are doing as far as the National Action Plan on Gender-Based Violence and other support structures is concerned. And we will be assessing and engaging. We have the tools ready. This is the time when we're putting tools and identifying specific departments and civil society organizations that will be engaging on just to see how far they're taking some of the processes. I think one of the issues that has come up in this current the financial year that has ended as we were looking into GBV and looking specifically on women's ministry, we've now found that social development is actually doing quite a number of work around this particular area, and that's the area that we'll be zooming in, engaging with them directly just to see how far they are doing and whether the structures that they are putting on the ground are working. Another activity that falls directly under this strategic objective is court monitoring. We normally come separately and engage with the committee on our court monitoring process. For this particular quarter, we monitored about 18 cases across provinces, and these cases are relating to the issues of access, custody of minor children, gender-based violence, as I've highlighted, rape, domestic violence, and murder, and murders which in most cases for Limpopo and Eastern Cape are still relating to witchcraft and hate crime. And I must highlight that it was really encouraging as we were doing our work for the first quarter to really see that in some of the provinces such as Limpopo, you see them taking very seriously the issue of intimate partner killing. And we have seen in terms of the trends, the cases that we monitored for the first quarter, specifically in Limpopo, you see the bail amounts that have been set by the court really being hefty, and even the sentences that have been imposed are really putting across a particular message as far as this particular cases are concerned. In terms of policy dialogue that are going to be conducted on the research findings, the research documents that we finalized in the previous financial year, we'll be taking a dialogue with policymakers as usual, and we will be engaging with them on the gender barometer of the previous financial year that we just finalized at the end of March. And also the GBV assessment report will also be engaged on. For this quarter, what we normally do first and foremost is to put policy briefs together. So we have finalized putting the policy briefs that speak to those particular research projects. We do take into account the fact that it's not easy for policymakers to be able to go through the thick research reports that we put forward. And therefore, we normally, at the beginning of each financial year, have a kind of summarized version of a policy brief that just highlights the issues, the methods that we employed as we are undertaking the research, and the findings and the recommendations. And then we then engage with them. It's much user-friendly to be able to do that. We've finalized the policy brief for those two specific research reports, and the meetings have been set to start rolling out from the second quarter. In the previous financial year, we had done some employment equity hearings, both gender transformation, looking into higher institutions of higher learning together with the Department of Higher Education, and some of the departments in the provinces. And for the first quarter, we went back to engage with them. So some of them, we saw them in December last year, and we wanted to then check whether they are really on track in terms of the recommendations that we put forward. So we've had meetings with UNISA, we've had meetings with UNIVEN, we've had meetings with Department of Higher Education, with the view of just checking to say these were the findings, how far are you in terms of either putting the four policies that we required you to put in place, and how far some of the structures that we are supposed to employ they are. And we're very happy to see that there is some sort of progress on in terms of the recommendations that we put before them. There were still some, of the documents that were still in drafts, and then we were still trying to check. For instance, UNISA, the last time when they came, they didn't even have a proper sexual harassment policy, and we were interrogating some of those documentations. We are calling further institutions of higher learning now in November, and as part of our planning in the first quarter was to engage with those specific institutions that will be calling to highlight to them to start getting documentation that we can start analyzing on them. So we'll be meeting, we'll be engaging with institutions such as TUT in this coming quarter, and University of Pretoria and the like. So they will be coming to us in November. We had a report which we have engaged this particular committee on the assessment of women's representation in political parties. We must highlight and thank the IEC on the fact that they have allowed us, because one of the, when we presented, I think in the last quarter, we highlighted that it was difficult for us to be able to engage with the political parties on that particular report. We tried to plan dialogue, but IEC allowed us to have a slot on their party liaison committee, where they have all the parties there, and we were able to present to all the parties in counting on some of our findings, and some of the parties have really, taking forward to say they would want to then engage with us on a one-to-one basis on some of the issues that we've highlighted. but also knowing that in 2016 we're going to be looking into local government elections, we are already starting to do some work around that as a commission, where we would be assessing the level of women's participation and representation in local government as well. And we would really want to assess and examine the extent to which political parties that will be contesting the local government elections will prioritize gender issues and gender mainstreaming through their election manifestos, party nomination processes, and candidate lists. So we will be looking into that. We are still doing the desktop now to ensure that at the correct time we also have finalized the report, with the hope that as parties then get into that particular process, that if they have some reports that they could refer to as they get ready for that particular process. Under strategic objective 4, that's 2, that's where we do the reporting, the protect and promote strategic objectives. And under this particular strategic objective, we have set for ourselves for each quarter a specific number of cases that we would want to open, and for each quarter we have set 180 as complaints that we will be dealing with on a quarterly basis, each quarter new cases that are coming in. And for this quarter we have really been able to exceed that. We have been able to open about 270 files just for the first quarter, and we're able to resolve 268 of the cases that we had with us. And this really represents quite a high growth if you look at how we had the numbers that we had put forward in the fourth quarter report. Files that have been brought forward from the previous quarter is 523, and now we have 525 that are pending. For legal outreach and clinics, we have done a total of 34 that were conducted for this particular quarter. And in this particular quarter, we have also tried to really concentrate more on rural areas. We've got about 22 legal clinics that have been held in rural areas across the country. In the reports that we provided, I also provided a consolidated legal clinics report, the report that looks in this particular fashion. And this was just to ensure that the committee members, they can go through specifically and see, because we highlight the areas that we've been to, the people that we have been able to engage with, whether by gender, by race, and all that. So that's the report that we have in. We still really, if you look at analyzing that particular report, we still really are attracting black women. And we are still hoping to employ further strategies just to ensure that we are able to get, you know, a number that really highlights that we are a rainbow nation, and it shouldn't be that it's only black women that are having problems. We know that in other areas, in colored areas and all that. So we are coming up with targeted strategies where we are engaging with NGOs that are working specifically in some of these communities, with the hope that that will help us to then garner, you know, a broader base as far as this work is concerned. The department has, as I indicated, really reached their target, and they've been able to approximately get 67% on opening of files. And they've also taken 34 legal clinics against the target of 27, which also highlights about 80% achievement against that. On this slide, as always, we try and just tabulate and highlight the cases that we received by province and the nature of the complaints that we are getting, and just to get a number highlighted to see by each province and by those specific categories what kind of the numbers that we are getting. I think I've already touched on the issue around maintenance cases, and labor cases are really coming out to be the high through in terms of the files that we have been able to close, taking into account the new ones that we've opened, and the number of files that we are now having in the department. And SO4 as well, we also do undertake systemic investigations. We've got three systemic investigations that we are working on. Transformation of the judiciary. We have finalized our report, and we've given that report to presidency, to Advocate Masuta in the Department of Justice, and we've given them 21 days just to make comments on the draft report, and then we will then immediately, having received that, then finalize. Presidency has already come back to us. They are happy with everything that we put forward, but we are just waiting for justice, and then we will then publish that particular report. The criminalization of sex work, we had planned some hearings around this particular area, but upon hearing that the South African Law Reform Commission is busy, they have put out a working paper on this particular matter, and they gave it to Justice. Justice made their comments and gave it back to them. So we decided just to hold off, to wait for that particular document to come forward. And then, of course, we are dealing also with issues around maternal health. We are still busy finalizing some of the processes around it. For this quarter, we are specifically coming up with interventions that will be looking into women's economic empowerment. As far as PI work is concerned, and there have been some of the provinces that have been looking into the GBV on schools campaign. Those ones that did not finalize within the last quarter. The majority of work related as well as far as public education is concerned was more around engaging with all the relevant stakeholders and coming up with specific and targeted programs. Because more of their work now, we are trying to ensure that it's done collaboratively so that we are able to have a specific impact in the regions or in the provinces. We have had quite a number of processes as well that we have led as far as this is concerned. If you look, for instance, in provinces like Mpumalanga, we've been having meetings with them, trying to help them set up, their men's organizations and coming up with men's forums. And we are happy that they were able to launch their men's forum in June, and we were then able to also help them with that particular process. And so in other provinces as well, it goes. We've been having, either we have engagements with men's organizations that are already there in view of forming partnerships, or where in cases where we don't, then we engage with them to see how we can help them. We have had meetings, for instance, with Agile and Urban Culture in Pretoria, and part of what we were doing was to come up with partnerships and rolling out of workshops on human rights, the role of men in promoting gender equality and also trying to combat gender-based violence. And as usual, we also engage with traditional councils around this particular area of work and religious sector, with a view to also coming up with focused activities that we can push forward, dealing with issues such as early child marriages, forced marriages, and problems that are experienced by women that are married under customary law, gender-based violence and discrimination of LGBTI persons. As far as the partnerships and collaboration meetings that we have had, we still are having challenges, and we've come up with programs that will be looking into issues relating to customary marriages, registration of customary marriages, inheritance, and then of course we also we've got a few matters where people have been coming forward, with the issue as well of dealing with the new Home Affairs regulations and all that, in terms of how it affects some of the women that are either single women or they have been divorced with their partners before. So those are just to highlight the matters that we've been looking into. And as I highlighted, part of what we are doing is to ensure that public education and information really works very close with media to ensure that some of the campaigns that we've been running separately, they also deal with them as a concerted effort. We have had quite a number of engagements through PEI. We've had entities that have come forward requesting us to train them on issues around gender mainstreaming, and that work is done by PEI. We've done training for Rand Water and for ESCOM in that particular quarter, and I think just as the quarter was also ending, we've also been able to train TUT, was really interested in that, and I think they were a bit worried because we had told them that we would be calling them in November, and they were proactive in terms of calling us to come and train them on gender mainstreaming probably so that by the time we come in November, they're a bit ahead in terms of the work that they do around that particular area. We have a community radio program which we are running under public education and information. 16 community education programs or interviews were held through that MOU or partnership that we have with the NCRF, and these interviews content was based on the theme that the unit was dealing with, which was women empowerment and human rights for the quarter. The focus was on minority languages in particular in this particular quarter, and this included those education programs being in Isiswati, Isindebele, Isixhosa, and Tshivenda. Radio slots that took place were on the Makado, KFM, Kandala Community Radio Services, and Radio Bushbuck Ridge. An education program was also conducted through SABC Education, and that yielded about 28 radio programs, and really the focus there was also on vernacular and English medium radio stations, which included both Tomela FM, Palapala Mugalala Lonene, Ligualabala Ukosi, and the like. Under public education as well, I know that the committee was interested in knowing the people that we reach when we do our campaigns and all that, and we are just calculating the numbers. 5 provinces. And the total there is 2007 for this particular quarter. We've also highlighted the listenership of the radio, specific radio stations that we've just highlighted where we have run our education program, and that's the average day listenership in terms of those radio stations. And we have also had a total readership. We also utilize our newspapers and all that, and this is where we always put we always ask our commissioners and staff members to always put documents, write up something on issues around gender equality, and we are always able to put some of those things in some of the newspapers that are on the ground. In terms of geographic areas covered for the quarter, we've also tabulated that because I know that the committee is also interested in that particular way. We've highlighted provinces, specifically the districts that we've been able to reach for this particular quarter, and we've also tried to highlight whether those specific areas are urban and or rural. And obviously, our provinces have really worked very hard to ensure that all the targets that we have for the quarter are met. And we do have quite a number of issues in provinces that we are able to take up as far as legal and PEI is concerned, coming out from some of the outreach and legal clinics that we've had. Different provinces have really highlighted different issues that they experience in this particular quarter, And however, there are common issues that are predominant across the board, which relates to gender-based violence and issues of widowhood and also LGBTI community matters. Provinces such as Western Cape should be, in terms of our own office, we have been able to really do quite a lot of work to penetrate correctional facilities and try and sensitize the inmates. So we have our own office here had a breakthrough in terms of being able to engage with correctional services and be able to speak to inmates around issues of constitutional rights and the like. The issue of early marriages and intergenerational marriages are still coming to the fore, and these now few states have also seemingly joined the queue, because all along we've really been highlighting KZN and Mpumalanga that are really experiencing these particular issues, but now we've also detected a few in the Free State province. And this really is an indication that we still need to do a lot of work to lobby key stakeholders within some of the provinces. In provinces like KZN, we've really had breakthroughs. We've been able to sort of set up a task team that is made up of social development, the office of the premier, so that we have that network, including the NPA, so they help us prosecute some of these matters. So that when we have these matters, we then get together quickly and everybody is able to then work on their mandate as quickly as possible to ensure that we are able to get a great result. Strategic Objective 3, that's where we do our assessment. And for this quarter, in terms of the international instrument, we've really been carrying on to engage with various stakeholders on our Beijing and see the report. The Women's Ministry has put forward now the country report, the draft country report, and we also were part of the engagement, the part of the stakeholders in terms of that country report that they've put forward. We've seen that they've now diverted it, and hopefully they will finalize it soon, and then we will then also be able to look at it closely, judging it against our own primary report, see whether they have been able to find the same issues that we found on the ground. This year we are looking into the African Protocol on Human Rights and the Rights of Women, and we have started the processes in terms of putting together the tools that we will be utilizing to engage with various departments, just to see how far we are as far as that protocol is concerned. And if the AGDI, we had a draft report that was finalized in the last quarter. It was sent before the committee that looks into this thing. The NAP, as UNECA has put it forward, and there were specific gaps that were highlighted, so they were waiting for this particular quarter just to close off those particular gaps. And we are going to be finalized with it soon. And the good thing about it is it will really be able to give us a sense of the status of women in the country. We didn't have any attendance from our budget as far as international and regional events are concerned. For strategic objective 4, I have put an APP document that really highlights, you know, under strategic objective 4. Strategic objective 4, if you remember, is more the support strategic objective that ensures that we have an institution that is able to run its mandate. But under strategic objective 4, one thing that we have put there that is not really more support related is the fact that we are starting with the work to undertake our 20-year review for the CGE achievements and failures. And this is a document that will be able to give us a sense in terms of what are the real things that we need to change. We are trying as much as possible not for it to be run by our own internal research department, as much as they will be part of that process, but we want it to really be objective, because the idea of this particular review is to ensure that it gives us a sense of what are the things that we should be putting forward, what are the things that we should be changing and what are the things that we really do need to work on as far as this is concerned. And I've just put a hyperlink specifically on the actual APT because I think it always helps and makes more sense just to get the actual APT as we put it before this particular parliament and just to see what is the progress that we have there. And Chair, in conclusion, that really is the report that highlights the work that we have done. And I think when we really look, because what we try and do all the time is each time we finalize a report, we also go back, you know, for the previous year just to check and get a sense of are we really improving or what's going on. And when we check in terms of the previous quarter, the first quarter of the last financial year, we really seen that there have been tremendous improvements in terms of the report for that particular year.
We will also discuss the details. nutshell as well, the background generally to the CGE budget is that at the time of planning there were pressures, serious pressures. There's been insufficient money available to appropriate for the core activities of the commission as mandated by the CGE Act. And during that presentation, we indicated that apart from the fact that most of our budget is spent on salaries for key staff members who really pursue the CGE mandate, legal officers, litigation officers, research officers who are at the forefront of implementing the CGE mandate, salaries would be going into that particular direction, and we were basically limited in terms of available training space. And if you look into the top block in this slide, you'll see that we could only make available around 9.7 million to fund the core direct activities for the CGE strategic work. And the distribution is also outlined in the table below according to the nature of particular spending. Our emphasis from this slide around the budget is to indicate that we had a limited space, planning space. However, we should also take stride of the fact that despite this limitation, work of the CGE can continue. The CEO has also outlined that we came up with tactics and strategies to club together, as an example, activities from to move away from a strict functional-based approach and bring in teams and have some dynamic deployment of our resources. And therefore, by so doing, we access efficiencies. There have been efficiency gains already showing. We'll basically, as we analyze the expenditure, that will come to the fore. Further information around the budget as background is just distribution, the nature of how we spend the budget. We can see that the compensation of employees accounts for the most. Professional services, which include all services run by third parties, including the AGSA at 4.8 million, where the audit work or the budget for audit work by AGSA would come has been budgeted to around 2.5 million. Training as well, training run by third parties is included into that particular budget. And various other activities. The CEO in a closing slide, she indicated that for a 3-year review, we'll be engaging third parties, so a budget has been set aside to assess the typical activities. So there is consulting activities outlined, but as a matter of approach, at the commission, we avoid using consulting services in general as a matter of strategic rollout. That distribution is also indicated in this particular slide. Point of emphasis is to say that although our spending is driven by COD, however, most of the salaries that we are paying are going to the have been allocated to the core activities of the CGE. We don't outsource, we do things ourselves, so there's an overcharge of our, we start the rent and then we utilize our own people. And then another thing is that when one looks into this particular budget structure, you'll see that we've got a very limited space in which we can call that we've got viable expenditure in which management and the commission can plan around and respond to issues that may often there are issues that occur outside of the ACP, and then because of budgetary pressures, you find that the commission is limited basically, or rather cannot respond to the best potential. Summary results, that's an income statement of financial performance. In summary, For this particular quarter, we'll see that the total income recorded by the commission was 17 million compared to 18.2 million in the previous financial year. For the same quarter, first quarter of the previous financial year, basically the key driving factor, despite the fact that in the current year there's been budgetary reduction from national treasury, and therefore there wouldn't be a material increase in terms of our transfers from national treasury. In the previous year, we have had donor income coming from partners who participated in the gender summit. Hence, we have 1.374 as other income. Whilst in the current year, we have only 166,000 as other income, and mainly that 166,000 comes from the interest that has been earned by the CGE on favorable positive cash balance at the bank. Expenditure in summary, in total this year we have spent 16.8 million, whilst last year for the same period we spent 17.3 million. The gender summit expenditure also was the key differentiator between this. That's the high level, the summary high level analysis of income and expenditure. Last year at this point in time we reported a surplus of 888,000. This year we're reporting a surplus of 270,000. As a matter of emphasis, basically, reporting the surplus also tracks activities in the APP. There's been quite a number of activities. I think our revenue, our income, is evenly spread. However, our spending is not necessarily evenly spread. It's responding to seasonal issues. We know that even in terms of our plan, that the first quarter is mainly, you know, consolidating planning, gaining structures, right? And the second quarter, seasonal issues would be the women month falls within the second quarter, so there will be heightened activities as well, so there will be corresponding heightening of expenditure in the particular period. So this surplus that we are reporting will be consumed by future activities. And there are quite a number of slides which basically, if you look into the slides on expenditure, we talk to it in the summary overview. However, slides that follow that from slide 11, 12 to 13, 14, basically further analysis of the same expenditure that we'll be talking about. So we have spoken about the level of expenditure, what has been key drivers. COE is one of the key drivers. What has changed between the two financial years, apart from us now operating on nearly fully populated structure, except for positions that we had to remove from the budget, as we have discussed when we presented the budget to the committee. What has changed? There has been a salary increase, adjustment to cost of living for staff members, which effectively came to around 7%. Senior managers came to 5.5%. However, at the time of this report, because this report is a report that has also been tabled to our internal oversight structures, to funeral commissioners, to all the oversight committees. So, in addition to the increase for general staff at 7%, there has been a provision for increase, the cost of which has been included in this figure. For senior managers, we have 5.5% salary increase, as well as for commissioners, we have made a provision of around 6%. Looking into expenditure analysis by classification, economic classification, we see that 75% of our current expenditure current quarter expenditure was for salaries, goods and services accounts for the remaining. Some of the points that we have raised around the issue of salary increases are repeated on this slide. Slide number 12 also indicates a spread of expenditure by our programs. We run the CD programs have been run in terms of the core being commissioners programs, corporate support, and the third one, the last one, would be the core service delivery. So we are also presenting an analysis around that expenditure. We can see from this slide that for the quarter under review, commissioner spending represented 16% of the total spending compared to last year where the commissioner spending came to 23% of the total spending for that particular quarter. And in the budget, effectively, we have budgeted 15%. So effectively, for the current period, commissioner spending tracks what has been budgeted. Corporate services remained the same, consuming around 33% of the spend for the year. What is good, what is taken away from this particular slide is that we can see that the core service delivery program consumed the most of the resources. As budgeted, and even in the current particular quarter, and compared to the previous quarter and the previous year, we see that last year we were spending around 48% of resources on cost service delivery. This year we have improved by 4%, and we are spending 62% thereof. We can skip slide number 13 is provided for information sharing. Slide 14 as well, just because our business model. In our business model, we have provincial offices, and this particular slide indicates expenditure per provincial office, per department within head office. We can take away that each province consumes around 4% of the budget. So effectively, 36% of what we spend goes to our outlets, which are provincial offices. Each province consumes on average 610,000 rand for this particular quarter. Finance as a department, because there's been heightened activities around audit, has consumed around 35% of the resources at 2.7 million against an annual budget of 7.8. Mainly due to the activities on the audit and IT as well. We are running a project on IT to revamp our IT infrastructure. IT department has also been a key driving factor. Moving along, going to the financial health of the institution on slide 15, statement of financial position. Good news is that we are still a healthy institution despite the fact that we have been highlighting that we are under budgetary pressures. Our balance sheet indicates a favorable total net asset. If you look into the last line, last year our net asset, our 6.4 net asset is basically the difference between what we have as assets, all assets, difference from liabilities, what we owe to other people. Suppliers and staff members. So we were 6.4 million, now we are 5.1, still a healthy state of affairs. Further details using ratios, we see that as an institution we are solvent, although the solvency is changing, however we are still healthy as an institution. Liquidity, as well, we are able, we've got cash in the bank, we are able to service our obligations when they fall due. change in between the two periods is the fact that if you look into the balance sheet, slide 15, you'll see that in 2014, June 2014, we had around 21 million in cash resources. And June 2016, we have 11 million. What is changing there is that we are changing that cash into assets. Last year, in the latter part of last year, we have acquired a fleet of vehicles, the equipment that we are utilizing. We have expanded the fleet by around 5 million, as you can see. Our balance sheet is growing, our asset base is growing, but our cash, unfortunately, is deteriorating. So the impact is that we are no longer as liquid as we used to be. But we are basically investing in assets that will enable us to carry out and roll out our plans, our strategies. Another underlying fact to be taken basically when one looks into the changes in this figure. The last bullet point on slide 16. There is a spending pressure on the institution. There is a decline in liquidity, as we have spoken about. My apologies for those abbreviations which have not been extended. Is to say that there's a risk of cash flow management will now have to happen and effectively manage cash flow, and there's also a risk around the going concern assumption. That particular risk is potential. It is potential because we are really under tremendous budgetary pressures. Slide 17, cash flow, just basically to account how we have utilized the cash over the period. The cash that has been generated last year, 18 million has been generated, the strike is given in the block. This year, 17 million, the main contributor is what we get from National Treasury. And last year we have paid out at this point in time in cash. The payment that has been made out was 16.3 million. This year 22.7 million. And this is a good indicator. We know that there's a public policy that we need to pay our suppliers as quickly as possible. So effectively, this is an indication that we are fulfilling the 30-day supplier payment policy and rules. And of what we have been, the net difference is that this year we have actually paid out more than we have received by 5.575. Last year we had a positive net difference between what we received and what we paid out. And in addition to that, money was utilized for investing activities. The above part was for operating activities. The middle part, investing activities, is money that has been used as part of the capital expenditure budget. So that's 4 million. The key driver there is the payment that we have made in lieu of the expansion of the fleet. And the next difference is that, like we have alluded before, the remaining cash on hand in the bank balance. This year, at the end of June, we had 11 million. Last year, we had 21 million. The slide is very colorful, shiny, light a little bit. My apologies. Technology fading. As we are improving our own technology, I think next time around, with a new IT, we'll be presenting a better slide. My apologies. And effectively, this is a summarization from our risk register. We know that in terms of the TFMA, we are required to have a system of risk management. Those are the responsibilities of the accounting office under Section 38 of the Act. This practice as well, I think, is also part of good corporate governance. At the CGE, we have begun the three of embedding risk management into our management activities, into the corporate governance activities. So effectively, we have compiled a risk register where we have identified the areas in which the city is exposed to risk, as well as those particular risks, and this is the picture. The colorful block on the right basically gives a guideline. It's a legend to say that in terms of risk assessment, the ratings, the red rating means high risk, and the yellow rating means medium risk, and the green implies that the risk assessment or rating is low. So as part of the policy, also in line with public sector-wide norms, we need to be in the yellow area. The risk appetite of institutions and that of the CD in our policy document communicate that we as an institution would not have a high appetite for risk. So the summary of the risk assessment that was done at the beginning of the financial year is as indicated. The details could be summarized in the next slide. One of the high risk areas is funding and spending pressures. It's a risk that has been identified, communicated to, but it's also a risk that the Commission does everything possible to mitigate. We, amongst other things, we are implementing the cost containment measures, overstretching the rent. There are engagements as well at high level. I mean, communicating about this, the existence of this particular risk, the National Treasury, and including other offices that are of help, Parliament, OISD. We are basically addressing the issue, and we are keeping an eye on it. Physical security is also a risk inherent in every business, especially where we're using items such as IT and the like. So amongst other areas of risk, physical security in our various offices and provinces, head office have been identified. The intervention that has been made to mitigate a particular risk during this quarter under review, the Commission has procured insurance for a premium of R250,000 per annum. Insurance that will be, it's called all business risk. It covers office content, it covers the fleet as well. This risk, until we finalize our project on ICT, will be there, ICT network. We're having a project underway which we believe will be completed during the third quarter of this particular financial year. Common risk affecting all entities in South Africa is electricity supply that can have impact on business continuity. We are addressing it. We're speaking to the landlord to have things like generators and the like, and then even including things like getting our backups and the like. So we are mindful there are strategies and activities that the Commission is undertaking to mitigate this particular risk. Accommodation risk also contributes. We will look into basically the high level picture on accommodation in the next slide. And some of the areas that have been identified through the risk assessment is basically of the messaging, what we are communicating. I think the business that we are in, the area where we are operating, gender equality, women rights and the like, the messaging has got to be proper, and we are mindful about that. As a result, I think this particular risk has been taken up to say that we need to, as we are changing people's perceptions and prejudices, the message is not to be proper, so we are looking into ensuring that nothing goes unnoticed. Summary of supply chain management issues. But for the board under review, one of the big transactions that the commission has engaged was for the procurement of new desktops and laptops. Our current IT infrastructure is very obsolete. I think the core, the bulk of it, has been procured in 2005-2006 financial year. So now we are reinventing. We spoke a lot about this particular project. That particular transaction, all combined, having been adjudicated, came to 1.3 million in total. We are also improving to ensure that governance is improved, the flow of financial information is timely and accurately provided to those who are tasked with oversight. We are improving on the accounting system that we are using. There has been a bid for that particular improvement that came to 374,000. One of the bigger transactions that they will be procuring in this financial year will be on travel and conferencing. The fact is that we have an existing contract with a travel agent. That contract will be ending December this year, so we'll be running a new procurement process around that. Also reportable, which also invested on the ICT project. We have procured for servers, and unfortunately, we report in basically on performance management because supply chain includes performance management and contract management. In the interest of transparency, we put in this on record to say that there's been a defective performance by one of our service providers, but a defect that has been subsequently corrected. So the issue has been addressed. It's just for the record. It was an issue that I'm only reporting to plenary earlier on. Logistics, we are utilizing the resources in accordance with the PFMA. The bigger resource that we have, which is susceptible to abuse and misuse, is fleet. So basically, we are overseeing, and then we are emphasizing that there is even worrying misuse of resources. Office accommodation, as we have indicated when we're looking into the risk. We're renting, we have leases, and the administrator for our leases is the National Department of Public Works. So there's been a number of leases that were coming to an end. However, due to the fact that there have been pressures in the lease administration side of public works, there's been public sector-wide proclamation by National Treasury, a guide, a directive, to say that in order to ensure that there's compliance to procurement rules, there's a blanket dispensation that has been given to public works to say that they can extend the expired leases for a period not exceeding 3 years, and where the escalation of rental fees does not exceed 6%. So we have agreed to the particular renewal of the last leases, except for the following, because there has been procurement already done. Victoria will be moving office. There has been procurement done. There's an alternative accommodation in Victoria, but CBD is still accessible to members of the public. Head office, we have also requested a total renewal of the particular lease. We are basically on a one-year extension, so possibility is that 12 months down the line, the head office might move depending on where one office that we wanted to move out there on the basis that the office was not habitable nor accessible to members of the public. Lastly, the activities that we undertook during the course of this quarter was the audit by the regularity audit by the AG, the Office of the Auditor General of South Africa. That audit has been concluded. The outcome will be tabled as part of the annual report. And as well, what is also key and important is to indicate that the Commission still continues to implement action plans to remedy those control challenges that have been highlighted in the previous report. We are taking all the recommendations as they come. So we are basically, as far as financial management is concerned, I think there are improvements generally and continuous oversight on the, and on the implementation of action plans. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
good.
Thank you.
Chair and also to thank the CGE for giving us this report. I think it's a very good report. As much as we have questions, but it's really just for clarification. I just want to ask the question regarding the SAA strange program of action that addresses violence against women. I just want to know what is your position on that. Okay, you know, the South African Intervention Program on Gender-Based Violence, I just want to find out, it is now under social development, and how are you fitting into that? Because I remember that the strategic plan for gender-based violence, you also part of the, you were actually a part of the committee. So now I just want to find out here, what position are you taking? When you go through the overview of the function of the organization, I think it's very interesting that you think about the Northern Cape and Northwest, that there has been an increase. The increase in domestic violence and femicide. As you are going to the community, do you think you have an idea what is the cost of can we actually be able to ascertain what are really the causes for that, for this kind of violence and the impact, and also in helping the sexual harassment that you're seeing? We went on an oversight site recently in the Limpopo, and we went to various mines, and really to actually to sort of like be able to ascertain when it comes to economic development of women. I know it's not one of your main things. It sounds like, you know, when you're presenting, is a by the way, but yes, we are saying that this year United Nations is declared as economic empowerment of women. But we are sort of like, when I speak about you are doing your mandate, I know you made your plans way before the declaration of the year to the United Nations, the Commission of the United Nations. But then I see that, like, you know, what we realize that is that when it comes to equity, empowering of women, when it comes to employment equity, I found it myself that it was a bit challenging, you know, to be able to pinpoint the position that women can actually take within mining, because the challenge is that, you know, mines will say, you know, these are heavy work type of duties, and so it's a bit difficult for me to say, to actually pinpoint and say, why aren't you having women in this, in this position, you know, how many women do you have? They'll say, yes, we have women, but you don't know if they're making tea and all that, because of the fact that we have no understanding of how mining works. I just want to find out what role have you taken to ensure, especially in this kind of in sort of like in Popo or Northwest, where they excessive mining. And if you also have the intention of actually pushing that through, you know, because for me, from what I see, is that you're taking a very sluggish position in that. Okay, and also the cost monitoring. It's actually good to see that you have provinces like Limpopo where they've taken up the bail amounts that they've increased, and also the sentencing also is good. But that is information that I would like to know, like, also how much money we're talking about, because then you can actually inquire, you know, when you go to court in the free states and say, okay, fine, why do they pay so much? Can you push it to be more? Are we able to do that? And what makes sense to actually to be able to have different sentencing periods and also the amount of pay. Another question is, you say that you have pair problems, you're distributing about 610, I think that is mostly in finance. You are distributing 610,000 per quarter per program. That is
I don't know how do you determine that amount? Like, I don't know, like, you know, you have to decide, because, like, you have all provinces have different challenges, but then yet this amount is constant throughout the provinces. What actually informed you to allocate that amount of money? Yeah, my questions are really about that. The other one is the consultation in the discussion of decriminalization of sex work with the South African Legal Reform Commission. Are you having any discussions on that? And also, you know, as far as I can remember, the IT, we've been talking about this issue of IT. You've been saying that, you know, you're reviewing your IT, money has been spent on IT, and yet you're not coming up with a solution. And how long is it going to take for you to actually be able to complete
I'm not quite sure about that, but mine is a resistance in terms of non-emotional say the other hand, you're afraid to call the landlord to put the documents and other links already. So, and what is it? You know, you've already made this social practice. I know that in the last before you put in this land and provision elections, you have seconds. And what is it that will be different now? What is it that you enforce now that you make them to change if they are not changing? And I know that the other political parties here refuse to come to the election. What is it that you're going to do now? What is it that, you know, I want something different. Let's come up with something different that will be doing in this election. And the other issue, the pending cases, you know, we appreciate the work that you're doing and not necessarily in terms of your outreach and your letter. You know, maybe it's true. We appreciate that because we've got legal providers to work in the past. We appreciate the work that you're doing, but in terms of the cases, I think we have too many cases that are still pending. Those are spoken. Some of the things and finance that are closed, but of course too many things in finance, and surely they will affect you in the second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter. Do you have any plan, either media or a long-term plan, to deal with the things of the nation? Your pie chart also does not include your, in terms of your table, you've got a case that deals with traditional culture, but in your pie chart, you don't include them. Also appreciating when the collaboration with the community organizations, you know, when they meet open, there were two organizations, you know, that even was not that big. But we had two community representatives because they wanted to see the work that you are doing. You know, they wanted you to publicize the work that you are doing in the community. They wanted to appreciate the work that you are doing with regards to strengthening your relations with community representatives. And there are somewhere where you spoke about the vacancy of the legal officers in Malawi. I'm not quite sure if you appointed already, or when are you going to appoint the relevant officer? And in slide 26, the first state, the PEI, there are more information provided for this team. There was a litigation case with Northern Sudan. I'm not quite sure how far is that case. Or just completed to understand from how far it should be, how far I will be the case. Let me, I've got several questions, but I'm not sure how far I will be the case.
Thank you.
about 500 cases that you're seeing, and I'm a little bit concerned because I know she's already highlighted it, but the plan that you have in closing the gates, because someone is already calling the area to recall the community, South African community, because you know there are so many cases, also in the courts and others. So we need to come up with a real plan as like really how you're gonna, because you're gonna be invested with a lot of as soon as people realize that you're pushing a lot, because the voice will be out there eventually, that you know if your case is not heavy cost, get the CGE to push it. So you're gonna be, as time goes on, you're gonna have a lot of cases that are coming in. So I just wanted to find out that. I know she asked the plan, but I just would like you to give us the plan, like how do you plan to address those cases. And when it comes to your supply chain management, you have, you're talking about performance management, so the effective performance by service provider. I just want to find out, the one that was supplying of servers. You withheld 781,000. Is it the same service provider or you're talking about a different service provider? And also, you're saying that you know you had hearings with different universities. I know the problems of personnel. You also have problems of funding. But I just wonder, is there a way that you could actually send questionnaires to different universities, asking the questions that you want to hear from them, instead of like bringing them over or maybe go to them for each and every university? This is just me thinking anyway. It's a standard questionnaire to send it out and to tackle all the different questions, like in terms of policy, employment, equity, and labor plan and all that. And then when they come back to you, then you can actually say, okay, this is a university that we really need to sit with and be able to actually address all those different problems. I'm just thinking. Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
is to thank you for the affirmation that you have given to us and our staff. Indeed, we are watching very, very grateful. And I'm very committed to the work of the city and the work of the city in general. I will just give general comments, but I will start with the last one. These are two separate business models. A review project and 20-year review. The 20-year review was really intended to say in 20 years of existence of CGE, what has been the impact, what can we learn from the ones who do, what have people saying about us, and what can we do better. The business model is internal. How can we deliver better? How can we ensure, for instance, a good example is the experiment we have taken that has worked very well, where both legal and education and community, they work together. When we go to community, in the past, legal will go and have legal cases, and then education will have legal. But what we're doing now is to say, no, when we go to community, we must see CGE as a unit, because people want information. But then also, as you tell them about the mandate and the work and the constitution, they must also be able to say three cases before us. So one is a long-term reflection, and the other one is a practical review, making an assumption that the CGE is here to stay. We don't want to begin to set messages of any nature. We cross the issue of the review in terms of the so-called other act my report when we come to it, otherwise the people will just be reluctant to work. We have said to our staff, there's this review, continue to do your work normally, we will hear from Parliament what the final move is. So the implication will be that we await the outcome, but we continue to work on the assumption that CGE is there in the constitution, it was declared in 1996 as an entity until it closes. We do not even want to be seen to believe that we are going to be there everything now. So that's that. The second one is the issue of the issues of higher education and mining. I'll take both of them. Our approach to our work is very clear. We take issues and then, on the basis of the sample that we have, then we write a report that is intended to influence across the board. If there is a trend in higher education that they don't have proper policies of sexual harassment, on employment equity, advancement of young women, on ensuring that women and men are treated equally, then when we write the report, we then go to present to the minister concerned, and of course it starts here, to the minister concerned and to the body, that professional body that work in that space. For instance, for higher education, it will be the body that brings together all higher education, which says this is what we found. But what is encouraging with higher education, that the department itself has said they are beginning to start feeling that, look, the sector, of course, the department says, we do not have powers necessarily to make them do what they do, but we said to them, look, guide them into a way to guide higher education. Where they are weak, send them to us if they are not doing their work the way they should be constitutionally. Let's work closer together. So we work with the department, we work with the professional bodies, we work with the individual institutions when there are cases that come up. So that's the way in which we work. So in the mining sector, the same approach we use. The same approach we some of the targeted mining houses come as a result of the cases that we see. So we receive cases. Others will be what is in the public space. And what is in the public space, we then say there are issues.
issues here. We have already heard from women in the trade unions, in the mining sector, that they are issues. And so in the questions that we ask, can we put some of those? But I think the suggestion that you made, that we should consider some general question and so all of them, might be something worth taking. The CEO says we send to all of them, so she needs to answer this one, because I think it is a good idea. In this case, then we'll be able, on the basis of that, to see which one are more deviant than the others. I think I'll hand over now to. Okay, before the CEO.
Yes, thank you, Sir President. Let me relate to the question that was concerning the possible the causes of the femicide cases. I have full responsibility for the Northern Cape, and this how we got to grip with the magnitude of the problem. And we asked the local newspaper, the Diamond Fields Advertiser, to give us a list of the cases of femicides over a 12-month period. And they gave us the actual story in respect of each incident, the data which were published, a list of about 14 femicide cases. And it gave us a good sense as to the details of the issue. Now, to cut to the heart of the matter, Shepherdson, we came to realize that, you know, when one of the partners in an intimate relationship, I mean, reaches the point of eliminating the other, it's actually a reflection of a failure in both parties in dealing with conflicts. And marriage is one institution where this kind of thing happens. And society is an area in which we do not pay attention in terms of preparing people even before. I mean, what is called pre-marriage counseling is really, you know, neither here nor there. Even post-marriage, marital counseling is just not there. As a result, people, as it were, fail by the seat of their pants in handling the conflicts. And so it is a critical area for even institutions. And at the moment, we are busy engaging with the political structure in the Northern Cape, with the Premier's office, to bring this to the attention of institutions to help, but in some cases, fairly highly placed members and indigenous populations that just not have the skills to deal with this matter. And then they also get involved in it. So it's an area that needs raising awareness as well as helping people through some kind of a program. Even through wellness, because employers also have wellness programs that equip people to deal, among others, with the resolution. It's work that is ongoing from our part. And it's something that ought to be done in the country. The second aspect, Chairperson, was the pending cases, what pending is. This, you know, I'm also speaking now as head of the legal department and chair of the legal department. CGE is, in a sense, because it is not an implementing agency, but one that is primarily monitored. But in cases like this, for example, CGE is doing some kind of lobbying and modeling, you know, role, which has led to convincing some of these institutions, for example, the South African Law Society, that is what large numbers of lawyers who have a system, you know, the so-called system, which monthly they can allocate certain time to run a case. The view is that charges bodies like those Labor Resources Center, or also Human Rights Labor Association, to come on board and take some and run. Ultimately, we hope, because they do this, but they do this only once a year, only on the 9th of August, on Women's Day. We'll have an access to justice in October. And it's just not good enough to have that assistance program only once a year. It ought to be. Ultimately, the idea is that CG will be able to bring them on board so that they take part of the load. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'll try to just run through some of the questions that I have been here. Of course, I will not see the those that have been responded to. In terms of, I think the Deputy Chair also touched on it, but there was a question in terms of the mine, the issues around equity and trying to grapple with that, and I'll try to club that with the question that came from, I think, Honorable Bengu, that also looked into the mining sector, and whether we're working with women's ministry on that. You know, we have, when we first engaged the committee on the tools, the web-based tool that we call the gender barometer that we have, when you look into that tool, it has got quite a number of intricate questions that we put forward. Two, we used to do it departments and all that, and as I indicated, this year we are focusing specifically on the mining sector. And I think the whole idea is to really engage and see where are the difficult areas in terms of women's participation and the kind of things that could be done. I think when you look at something like mining, it will probably almost be something like ESCOM. We also had a vigorous engagement with ESCOM on one of these things, and I think some of the things were such an eye-opener when it comes to the kind of work that actually needs to be done, by women having to climb on the pylons of electricity that is still alive and do work there. But the fact of the matter is, as much as you find that work is difficult or it seems difficult for men, there are women who actually want to do that kind of work. And therefore, for us, it's important that women, as women, we get a choice. We get a choice. We shouldn't be closed out to say, you're a woman and therefore you can't enter this particular space. But there must be that choice for you to be able to take that particular work. I mean, when we went to ESCOM, we saw this woman who was saying, "This is what I enjoy doing." She was flown on a helicopter, hanging, everything like this, to a pylon, electric pylon of a live electricity that was passing through, and there was work that she needed to do, and she enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And you know, when we see things like that, yes, it's an eye opener in terms of the difficulties in there, but you see that there are women who actually feel that that's the way that they enjoy and that's what they would want to do. So for us, that's also what is important. When you look into the mining, we've had quite a number of meetings. You know, there are also some organized institutions. And for instance, you know that there's an institution called the Benchmark Foundation that has also done some sort of research, a mini research, specifically looking at Kumba iron ore in the Northern Cape, and there are some of the things that they are finding or wanting us to further investigate. So that those are the things that we will be looking into as far as that work is concerned. In terms of cross monitoring, that's for Amawi. The bail. I will have to look for
total numbers. But we did look and we're checking against Gauteng, because Gauteng there are quite a number of cases that we are also monitoring, where we see, you know, lesser sentences being put forward and the bail amounts that are being put forward being lesser than what we saw in the book of this specific first quarter. I will give you those specific numbers. You asked whether we have had consultations in terms of decriminalization of sex work with the South African Law Reform Commission. We have engaged the South African Law Reform Commission, and they responded at the time to indicate to us that they are still working on the paper, and that paper, they gave it to the Department of Justice, I think, around December last year. And then we also engaged with the Deputy Minister for Justice, Deputy Minister John Jeffries. And we had a meeting with him at CCD, and he also indicated that yes, indeed, the South African Law Reform Commission gave them a paper, but there were specific things that they wanted them to look into further. So they commented, and then they gave back the paper to South African Law Reform Commission. The reason that we also decided to hold or stop for a while the hearings that we had planned on this particular work was to first wait and see what the paper comes out with, so that then those engagements will be based on that particular paper.
Political parties, look, I think this is ongoing work. For me, it's important that we have also been able to engage finally with all the parties that are sitting in the PLC, in the party liaison committee with IEC. Because the whole idea is that national, as much as that is a national strategy, but the same political parties will be starting their process as far as local government processes is concerned. So we are hoping that they will get and engage with some of the findings and the recommendations that we put forward. I must indicate that even some of the parties, we are hoping we will see them, whether they will actually follow through on some of the commitments. There were specific commitments that were made in that PLC by some of the party representatives to say they will definitely want us to engage with them on a one-on-one basis. Even those parties that also pulled out, we really got a positive feedback in terms of them wanting to engage further with us. So we are going to follow through with them. We had this particular meeting in August, so we still wrote some letters to some of the people that this can give the right to this one, and then we will then see to it that we engage. The way that we do it for local government, what we then do is to look into those party lists and the manifestos that are put together. We also analyze the actual manifestos, so that's also the work that we'll be doing as far as local government is concerned. Look for those manifestos and check whether these manifestos, after we have also even engaged, after we have also put forward the national report on women representation within a political area, whether some of those things have been taken into account. And as part of that report, we also observe, we are there physically to actually see how IEC itself also holds these processes, and whether things like disability and, you know, pregnant women and all that, whether those things are really taken care of on the actual day of the election. So that's the process that we will also be following as far as that is concerned. Look, I hear the concern in terms of the cases that are pending, but I think the whole idea as well is, remember that when we, like, this we are closing now with 5 petty sites, and if in the next quarter what we'll be doing, we might find that we close maybe even 50% of that. But because of the new additions as well that are added on that year, they also sort of, I mean, within that quarter, they also make it as if, you know, the numbers are still high. Which is why we start off by saying we will highlight to say in the last quarter we closed or we left pending 500, then we closed maybe 224, we have 270 that has been added, so our pending will also be higher. But we do take that point. Part of what we are really trying to do is to ensure that we try and push and perfect some of the cases. Remember as well that cases are difficult in themselves, in the sense that you engage with the respondents, you engage with applicants, and sometimes the turnaround is not as quickly as you would want to do, but we really take that point and we will try and ensure that we push further and more strategies to ensure that our cases don't you know, stand open for too long a period.
What kind of process we must follow when we deal with some of these cases.
we also look into those ones where there is imminent danger that, that could just rupture, and then we are able to then to deal with those in the end. I take the point on the kite hat. One day I will be like fearful and master my spreadsheet. So we always take these things, you put them on spreadsheets, and then you draw up, and I actually lose realize that it was not really for that. Legal officer in Mpumalanga has been appointed. We have an officer there in Mpumalanga. You checked as far as Free State was concerned. You know, in the Free State office, what we've been doing, and most of their work, we've sort of reported it under head office. And the reason is head office has been supporting the Free State. We've got a senior education specialist that has been supporting Free State and doing the work, because we had the officer there suspended, and there was a process that was taking place in terms of disciplinary and everything else. That process has now been finalized, and then we have advertised to be able to then appoint, so that we don't have to take on the work for that particular process. Hearings, yes, Honourable Matthew, like I said, when we undertake hearings with institutions of higher learning, including even departments and specifically for legal, we have a pro forma questionnaire that we send to them. But it is important that we actually call them, because many a time we never know who has responded to the questionnaire, and at face value you might get information and think that everything is correct, and only to find that there are gaps. So we always want, especially the accounting people in the departments and even in these institutions, to come forward so that we are able to engage and answer. When you are engaging with somebody, you are able to then follow through and probe. Sometimes somebody gives you a short answer in a questionnaire and it does not give you enough information for you to be able to then come up with a particular report. So we do send the questionnaire, and we do request them to then also give us further information. Some people ignore some questions. You send a questionnaire, nobody responds to that question. But when they are physically here and they are taking oaths, remember, that's also the part. Because then you are taking oaths to tell us that what you are telling us is actually true. Then we are able to then probe. So that's the reason that we use that two-pronged process as much as we send the questionnaire upfront for them to deal with. In terms of universities, chair and the GBV in universities, you know, when we started a process in 2011 at the CGE, where we signed and we engaged with all the different GCs of the universities, really saying there is nothing that is on paper that binds them to really do something about gender-based violence that is happening on campuses. And part of what we wanted to do, we signed an MOU with them, and we engaged with the Minister of Higher Education, and he was very happy with that particular process, and it was, we wanted to come up one with a research which gives us an idea of exactly what is happening, exactly how are they dealing with some of these things, and then be able to come up with a policy document. The whole idea was come up with a policy document that will then give the Minister of Higher Education and ensure that that is then pushed through by all the universities. However, I think that Higher Education was going to fund that, and then later on they said they didn't have money for that. We have been engaging with colleagues from the Ford Foundation and other institutions, and especially from the KZN area. They have really been, you know, forthcoming in terms of really wanting to take this thing forward. But we really still need to engage better. There are some programs that some of the universities are running. Devon University of Technology is an example. But what we expect we are going to do is monitor those particular programs just to see whether there is anything that is really working as far as that is concerned. concrete policy documents that we can force institutions of higher learning to look into and work on. The business model question was responded to. We have been, in actual fact, not so long ago, we also decided to have a meeting with Ms. Gaza just to see what is it that she can pay in terms of this matter. In terms of the court processes, we were awaiting a date for the court to give us a date for litigation. However, I think about a week ago, the chair had been passed by Kina to go and meet with Ms. Gaza and engage and see exactly what is it that she can pay, because part of what we are worried about, as much as we know that CFMA says we must go back and claw, but we also don't want to find ourselves having utilized too much of money, you know, the idea of throwing good money after bad money and not being able to recoup. So that meeting happened, I think, last week Friday, so we'll hear progress in terms of what is it that she is claiming. And basically what we're saying, we also have some, you know, two court orders just in terms of the interlocutory applications. You know, within a matter, before you get to trial, there might just be a few things that you fight about, like give us further information and all that. And we have court orders against specifically on those. And part of what we're saying is when she thinks about how much money to pay, those two court orders we can't ignore at all. So we'll get a sense from the chair in terms of what the meeting was all about, and then we'll then take a decision as to whether we will continue or whether we will settle, and then she can make those specific payments. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
one of the second was asking what is it that we are going to do differently for the political parties of women. We have signed MOUs with a different charter in our provinces, and we have sensitized the women. Why it is very important that they comply and they work towards having women in their political parties, and we have sensitized the women. And with Prada, it is very important that it is an organization that takes all political parties. So we're talking with the women to say, if you're looking forward to the CCP and a women president, we should start. And we have started, and we are aware that most of the political parties are already with their youth. And I must say, in my province, in the capital, we have just had a meeting, a conference, and we are having a national conference this weekend in the president of the South National. So CGE is on top of the work, and what we're doing differently is to sensitize the women and give them the correct attitude and the confidence in most cases. The confidence we've seen that women are protected. Yes.
Fearful, given to answer these questions related to finances, performance, etc.
Thank you, Chairperson. The question regarding the defensive whether it was the same service provider. Yeah, the answer is the same service provider. The CGE went and enforced the contractual provisions, and subsequent to that, the service provider has met the performance expectation, and this is also linked to the ICT project. The impact of this was that it has impacted on the project on IT, because non-performance by the service provider was for the delayed supply of servers.
Mm-hmm.
Servers are basically the things, platform for which the project would be working on. So the impact of that is that the timelines have moved on the project. The original anticipated completion of the project was the 30th of July, and that has moved to the end of October. So that's the impact of it. The questions around the resourcing of provinces, in particular, an example would be the Limpopo province. Effectively, we resource the provinces equally. Unfortunately, I think largely owing to the fact that we've got limited resources, departments, internal departments, and provinces are basically taking the budget that has been given to them. There isn't enough room to allow flexibility of accommodating peculiar provincial dynamics. We try here and there, but in effect, we allocate the constant fixed amount to provinces. Even the number of resources per province is 5 on average, except for Cape Town, where we also have got the parliamentary unit. Otherwise, a typical province has got a provincial manager, a legal officer, one legal officer, one education officer, and two administrative and support staff at a very junior level. And the limitation is basically availability of money, can't respond to every other thing. So provinces are budget takers, in effect. And hence, it answers the question around the 610,000. With regards to fleets, the allocation is also in the same way. Each province has got a small polo vehicle for administrative, and we've got Kundis anywhere allocated to any other province. So the Kundis are being utilized. They are new as well. I think it was in part in responding to getting strategies in place. Because previously, in the absence of having Kundis, we were compelled, whenever there's a large number of people traveling for them and the like, we were compelled to use outside higher vehicles. So we have added those Kundis so that whenever we got functions far away from the office, we can all travel in a bigger vehicle.
thinking that you have distributed to provinces. Maybe in the next meeting, just give us the list of all the vehicles that have been purchased and the, and how you have allocated them to the provinces.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Young girl in what time can you speak to the
Oh.
Thank you. Okay.